The irony, though, is that if they succeed, if they actually do tear this country down, dismantle it as they want to, then the luxury and freedom and comfort that they take for granted really will disappear. And they will finally get the authentic version of the oppression that they so desperately want.
Matt Walsh speaking at this year's Issues Etc. Making the Case conference.
Unless we as the rational, we as the moral, we who understand objective truth, objective morality, unless we stand in the way for their sake and for our own.
You can watch and listen to Matt Walsh's presentation, Making the Case Against Woke Culture, with a recording of the 2020 Making the Case conference. We'll send you links to download a podcast and watch a video stream for a tax-deductible contribution of $250. Find out more at issuesetc.org or call 618-223-8385. Well, yesterday, September 30th, was the 44th anniversary of the Hyde Amendment. You probably heard about it. If you're pro-life, you probably know what the Hyde Amendment has been doing for the last 44 years. Well, one of the things it's been doing is it's been getting broad bipartisan support. It was never that controversial before. But things have changed, at least in the last 10 years or so. The Hyde Amendment has come under fire, and I believe that a future president, Joe Biden, has vowed that it will not see the light of day during his 4 years as president. We're going to talk about the 44th anniversary of the Hyde Amendment. Joining us to do so, Dr. Michael New. He's visiting assistant professor of social research and political science at the Catholic University of America, associate scholar at the Charlotte Lozier Institute, and columnist for National Review Online. Dr. New, welcome back.
Oh, thank you very much for having me.
So why is this recent 44th anniversary of the Hyde Amendment especially significant?
It's significant for a lot of reasons. I mean, first, the Hyde Amendment, which places limits on the ability of the federal government to fund abortion through the Medicaid program with taxpayer dollars, has saved millions of lives. My estimate from the Lozier Institute indicates it saved over 2.4 million lives since 1976. It has a great history. It's been bipartisan for a long time. Many House Democrats routinely used to support the Hyde Amendment. President Clinton and President Obama also signed appropriations bills that had Hyde Amendment protections in them. It's popular. Opposition to taxpayer funding of elective abortion tends to pull very well. And also because it's in peril, that unfortunately Joe Biden, who's the Democrats' nominee for president, has now come out against the Hyde Amendment. Many House Democrats are against the Hyde Amendment as well. So even though it has a great track record for the past 44 years, it's in peril. And what I've been doing this past week is trying to give it some attention, that pro-lifers need to know about its history, its legacy, and should be prepared to defend it.
Give us some of its history. How did it come about?
The Roe v. Wade decision was handed down in 1973, and I think the pro-lifers in the 70s realized that reversing Roe v. Wade was probably not going to be all that likely in the short term. But they wanted to do some things to at least protect some unborn children and protect taxpayers. And one solution they came up with was the Hyde Amendment, that the federal government has a Medicaid program that offers types of health care insurance to people who are on low incomes. And people noticed that this Medicaid program was paying for elective abortions. So you had a congressman from Illinois named Henry Hyde who agreed to draft and sponsor legislation that would end this practice, saying that the federal government would get out of the business of funding elective abortions through the Medicaid program. That's kind of how the Hyde Amendment got started. That, again, it was a very important victory for pro-lifers. It passed in 1976. It received the votes of, interestingly, 103 House Democrats. It was really one of our first big legislative victories. Like most other pro-life laws, it was challenged in court. It went through a series of legal challenges in the 1970s. Supreme Court agreed to hear the case in 1980, and in the case called Harris v. McRae, the U.S. Supreme Court upheld the Hyde Amendment. So it was one of our first legal and judicial victories as well. And ever since the Hyde Amendment was upheld in 1980, we've seen the U.S. abortion rate fall almost every year since that time. So again, it was our first big legislative victory, and it was one of our first big judicial victories as well.
Why does it have to be renewed regularly?
It needs to be renewed regularly because essentially the Hyde Amendment is a rider to an annual appropriations bill. What the Hyde Amendment does is it basically places a limit on the annual bill that allocates funding for the Department of Labor and the Department of Health and Human Services, which pays for Medicaid. So since we basically appropriate money every year for Medicaid through the federal budget, bills that fund Medicaid have to include Hyde Amendment protections. So the federal government passes the budget every year, and since we pass the budget every year, the Hyde Amendment has to be included every year to make sure that, again, federal taxpayer dollars are not paying for elective abortions through Medicaid.
Okay, so talk about those decades of bipartisan support, even in the midst of the Hyde Amendment being challenged in the courts. Why was it popular? Why was it really, in a lot of ways, non-controversial for so many decades?
Right, as I said before, 103 Democrats voted for the original House Democrats, I should say, voted for the original Hyde Amendment back in 1976. And again, President Clinton was obviously a Democrat, and President Obama, also a Democrat, routinely signed appropriations bills that had Hyde protections in them. Basically, it made a lot of sense politically for Democrats to support the Hyde Amendment. Essentially, the most Democrats who served in House or the Senate, their position on abortion was that abortion should be legal, but by and large, it should not be funded with federal taxpayer dollars. So that was a position that made a lot of political sense, that the Democratic Party has always been home to a lot of Catholics. The constituency for a lot of these Democratic elected officials tend to include a lot of Catholic voters who weren't necessarily single-issue pro-life voters, but were pro-life. Or if they weren't pro-life, at least had misgivings about abortion. And it was a way for these Democrats to kind of reach out to these social moderates and social conservatives in their districts or their states.
How has the Hyde Amendment influenced over these decades, influenced public policy?
The Hyde Amendment has had an excellent effect, that there's a really broad consensus that it has saved millions of lives. And it's interesting. When we discuss public policy as it pertains to sanctity of life issues, there's often disagreement. Pro-life researchers say one thing, researchers who support legal abortion say something else. But when it comes to the issue of taxpayer funding for elective abortion, there's quite a lot of consensus that pretty much pro-life and pro-choice researchers all agree that the Hyde Amendment has saved a lot of lives. The Guttmacher Institute, which up until about 2006 or 2007 was Planned Parenthood's research arm, they did a literature review in 2009 that looked at studies and analyzed the Hyde Amendment and analyzed other limits of taxpayer funding for elective abortions. They found an overwhelming number of those studies indicated that the Hyde Amendment lowered abortion rates. The Center for Reproductive Rights, again, another group that supports legal abortion, they did analysis in 2010. They found that the Hyde Amendment had saved over a million lives. My own analysis for the Lozier Institute, which came out in 2016, I updated it this past summer to update the calculations. I found the Hyde Amendment has saved over 2.4 million lives since 1976. So very strong consensus amongst both pro-life and quote-unquote pro-choice researchers. Hyde Amendment has reduced the abortion rate and has saved lives.
What is the possible future of the Hyde Amendment?
Well, the Hyde Amendment is in peril. I mean, the fact that, it did survive two Democratic administrations, both President Clinton and President Obama. I think there was an effort in 1993 to do away with the Hyde Amendment, but it did survive one challenge in Congress. So it did survive, again, two separate Democratic presidential administrations, but it may not survive future ones. But again, Joe Biden, after years of support for the Hyde Amendment, indicated that he now opposes the Hyde Amendment, and he made this announcement last summer. Again, you have at least 180 House Democrats who also have come out in opposition to Hyde. So essentially, pro-lifers are going to have to work hard and just be savvy about this. We need to let our friends and neighbors know about this, that essentially most Americans don't support taxpayer funding for abortion. So I think that this is something that will frankly hurt Democratic candidates both nationally and in a lot of local races. But I just think that pro-lifers just need to be especially vigilant going into the future.
Why do you think that Vice President Joe Biden changed, after long support, changed his mind on the Hyde Amendment?
Because I think that the Democratic Party is changing. And the Democratic Party has become a lot more socially liberal. That for a long time, you had a lot of people who supported Democrats who were Roman Catholic. You had a lot of senior citizens who came of age during the Great Depression and World War II. You know, a lot of these people were various ethnic groups. A lot of them were Roman Catholic, and a lot of them tended to be somewhat liberal on economic issues. They supported unions. They supported different kinds of government programs, but they were socially conservative. And I think smart Democrats did not want to alienate these voters. That generation is kind of passing away. If you were 10 when the Great Depression happened, you're in your late 90s or probably even 100 right now. So that group of Democrats who came of age during the Great Depression and World War II, there's less and less of them. They're being replaced by younger voters who just tend to be a lot more liberal on social issues, a lot more secular. And as a result, you see a lot of Democrats trying to win primaries adopt more liberal positions on abortion and on same-sex marriage. So again, I think that the Democratic Party is changing. It's become more liberal. And, you know, Joe Biden saw this happening, and that's why he changed his position.
Is there a way for the Hyde Amendment or something that serves a similar political function to be made permanent, Dr. Nick?
Yeah, there is legislation that would codify the Hyde Amendment into federal law. And we actually had a vote on that in 2019. There was a bill called the No Taxpayer Funding for Abortion and Abortion Insurance Full Disclosure Act of 2019. So there is a way to codify the Hyde Amendment into federal law where we wouldn't have to pass it every year. The problem is we would need 60 votes to do that, that such a piece of legislation would inevitably be filibustered by the Senate, and we would need 60 votes to invoke cloture, and it's just not clear that right now we have 60 votes. And when this bill came up in 2019, it got 48 votes, but didn't get 60. So we just need to find a way to get more pro-life people elected to the House, more pro-life people elected to the Senate, and obviously a pro-life president, and we could codify the Hyde Amendment so we wouldn't really have to worry about trying to pass it each and every year.
As far as we can tell, where do the American people stand on the central issue for Hyde, which is federal funding for abortion?
I think it's just very clear that majorities of Americans oppose taxpayer funding for elective abortion. I did an analysis of this issue. I came across, I think, 7 polls that have been taken since the summer of 2016, and I found that 6 of the 7 found majorities oppose taxpayer funding for abortion, and all 7 found that pluralities oppose taxpayer funding for abortion. And these were all done by different polling firms that used somewhat different question wording, but just the consensus was very clear. This is not a popular position that by and large, taxpayer funding for abortion, I should say, is not a popular position. Most Americans do not want to see their taxpayer dollars used to fund abortion.
Finally, then, I'm just curious, in your opinion, should Joe Biden be elected president and should a majority be won in the U.S. Senate by the Democratic Party, is the Hyde Amendment gone for the next 4 years?
It's at risk. Right now, I'm not sure we know the positions of everybody in the House as such, but I certainly think a lot of House Democrats oppose it. I do think a lot of Senate Democrats would oppose it. The Republicans could try to make use of the filibuster to try to stop it. I'm really not good at predicting politics down the road, so I don't want to say for sure it was doomed. The Hyde Amendment did survive unified Democratic control during both the Clinton and Obama administration, but nowadays the Democratic Party is frankly a lot more liberal on these issues. So I think it's in great danger. You'd have to rely on Republicans to mount a filibuster and be persistent about their opposition. I think they'd be willing to, but that wouldn't necessarily, you know, guarantee the success. I think with budget bills, very often you can get them through with a majority. There's rules that make it more difficult to, or in some cases make it impossible to filibuster a budget bill. So I do think that, yes, if Joe Biden is elected and Democrats do get a majority of seats in the House and Senate, there's a very good chance that they'll succeed in repealing the Hyde Amendment.
Dr. Michael New is visiting assistant professor of social research and political science at the Catholic University of America. He's associate scholar at the Charlotte Lozier Institute and columnist for National Review Online. You'll find a link to his columns at issuesetc.org. Click Talk On Demand Archives. Dr. New, thank you.
No, thanks for having me.
Tomorrow on Issues Etc., we'll discuss the history of the pro-life movement with Marjorie Dannenfelser of the Susan B. Anthony List. We'll continue our series with Chris Roseborough on evangelical buzzwords, and we'll play Issues Etc. soundbite of the week. I'm Todd Wilkin.
Listen
thanks for listening.
Afternoons to Pastor Todd Wilkin and guests on Issues Etc. Issues Etc. is a listener-supported program. Your financial support is vital for the continuation and expansion of this worldwide outreach. Our mailing address, Issues Etc., P.O. Box 83, Collinsville, Illinois, 62234. Box 83, Collinsville, Illinois, 62234. You can also donate at our website, issuesetc.org. Issues Etc. is a production of LPR, Lutheran Public Radio.
College Preparation Station in Maryville, Illinois offers ACT, SAT, and PSAT test prep, scholarship application classes, college and career counseling, and more. Hi, this is Lori Konski, president of College Preparation Station. We have helped our students obtain more than $7 million in tuition scholarships in 12 years. Find out more at cpsprep.com. Let us help you create a vision and find your future. The College Preparation Station in Maryville, Illinois, cpsprep.com.
In a world awash with all sorts of information, opinions, and ideas, there is still a place where God's Word is the central and only focus. Messiah Lutheran Church, 801 North Madison, Lebanon, Illinois. At 9 o'clock on Sunday mornings, God's people gather there to listen to Him. There you will find His words of law and gospel, and of course, our Lord's Holy Supper. Bible classes focus on the Bible and the Lutheran confessions. Come, listen, believe, and live, and check out our website at messiahlebanon.org.